sinless, miraculous life who predicted his resurrection and rose from the dead. This is unique. Therefore, Christianity alone can use its miracles with apologetic or evidential value as vis-a-vis or over against the other systems. The others are self-canceling, only Christianity, because it has unique convergence of three or four series of miracles, can do this. So we just simply say, thank you to Hume, you misunderstood the kind of miracles that Christianity has. Joseph Smith didn't fulfill hundreds of prophecies. In fact, he was a false prophet. It's been proven. He didn't live a sinless life. We don't have to go into that. He married a second wife and said, isn't this bigamy? And then a third one and a fourth one, too. We don't have to go into that. Joseph Smith didn't predict his resurrection and pull it off. So we don't have that kind of miraculous claim and credential in any other system. Now, that leads me to a few conclusions here. The first thing I'd like to point out is that there is a modern revision of this theory by George Chrysides, C-H-R-Y-S-S-I-D-E-S. And George Chrysides has taken the argument one step further. And his argument against miracles is not against their possibility or even their identifiability or even their occurrence. He is simply saying that if one occurred, you'd have no way to connect it with God. You'd have no reason to attribute causal agency, divine causal agency to it. And here's his argument. No event can be identified as flowing from a rational agent unless it is regular and repeatable. Miracles by nature are not regular or repeatable. Therefore, miracles cannot be identified as flowing from a rational agent. Now, let's go through this one at a time. Why is it that no event can be identified as flowing from a rational agent unless it's regular or repeatable? Because if it just happens once, it might be a lucky shot, as it were. But if it's done over and over and over again, you assume rational agency. If you're standing there in a barn and there's a big target painted on the barn and you see an arrow come and hit right in the bullseye, you're not sure that that arrow was shot by an intelligent being who is a very good archer. But if you see him do it over and over and over again, you assume it comes from rational agency. But miracles by nature are not regular and repeatable. Therefore, by nature, you could never know a miracle occurred as a result of a rational agent. Now, the answer to this particular objection is that it too begs the question, because it assumes that only the regular or repeatable can be known or caused by a rational being. And miracles are irregular. So if you assume that only the regular or repeatable can be caused by a rational being, and you assume miracles are irregular, then, of course, miracles can't be so attributed. Let me give you a counter illustration. Suppose we're on the golf course. There are hundreds of people standing around, and you tee off. And the ball goes, and it falls near the green, and it runs over into the hole. Hole in one. Repeatable? Hardly. Irregular? Sure. Actually happened? Yes. Can you connect it with the rational agent over there who did it? Yes. Seems to me that that would serve as a counter-illustration that sometimes it doesn't have to be repeatable to know it was attributed. Well, some people say, well, it has to be predictable in order that you can know that it is following from a rational agent. Suppose John is sleeping, and we look at John and we say, I can't predict either when he's going to wake up or I can't predict when he's going to lift his right arm. Unpredictable. But when John does awake, lifts up his right arm and puts some food in his mouth. Did you know that that was caused by a rational agent? Sure, unpredictable, but nevertheless, you know it has a causal connection. So repeatability is not the basis for rational agency. Purpose or fit is the basis. This is why C.S. Lewis says miracles fit into nature. Counter illustration. Suppose my car is broken down, and my child is deathly ill, and we're way out in the country, and I have to have that car in order to get that child to the hospital. But in order to fix the car, I need a specific bolt, and I don't have that bolt at all. And I pray. I get on my knees, and I say, Lord, I pray give me that bolt to fix this car so I can get this child to the hospital. And I get a bolt out of the blue. And it after I'm through praying, that bolt out of the blue drops right there on the driveway where I'm working on the car. Just the bolt I need. Unrepeatable. Never happens again. Did you know that there was rational agency? I think you'd have the appropriate right to say there was divine purpose there in the bolt out of the blue because it fit into that situation. That very bolt I needed to accomplish that moral purpose. Hence, it's not repeatability that is necessary for rational agency. Now let me conclude with a few comments. Number one, the possibility of miracles stands or falls with the possibility of God's existence. Any attack on any passage of the Bible because it is miraculous is really an attack on the first verse of the Bible. If you can accept the first verse, there is no other verse in the Bible that should give you problems. Because in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Let me ask you this. Is it harder to make water out of wine or to make water out of nothing? If you can believe in ex nihilo creation, if you can believe in the first verse of the Bible, every other miracle is puny. This is why the deists, our founding fathers, as you know, were not largely Christian. Our founding fathers were largely deists. Thomas Jefferson, for example, cut all the miracles out of the four Gospels, and it was published posthumously. It's called the Jefferson Bible. It ends, they put Jesus in the tomb, rolled the stone, period. The rest is miracles. Very short, a little Bible. All the miracles out of the New Testament. If you can believe the first verse, you can believe all the rest of the verses. So, in effect, higher criticism is not so much a factual, scientific study. It is a philosophical attack built on a naturalistic presupposition that says miracles can't happen, and they have to assume that miracles can't happen in order to prove that miracles can't happen, and they have to assume there is no God, because if there's a God, miracles are possible. If God, then miracles. Second comment. Is the only way, then, that somebody could effectively disprove the inspiration of the Bible is to disprove God. Because if God exists, miracles are possible. It's possible that all this is true and is believable. You would have to disprove God. And I'm not going to take long on this, but I want to make a point or two on attempts to disprove God. First point is this. All attempts to disprove God boomerang. They all fly back in the face of the person making the denial. Example, C.S. Lewis said he was once an atheist, and he concluded that atheism is simple or circular because one of the stock arguments of the atheist is there's injustice in this world, therefore there can't be a God. Now, said Lewis, I started to think about that. What if there was injustice in the world, but it wasn't ultimately unjust? Then it would be ultimately justified. And you couldn't argue against God if evil can be ultimately justified. So, if I say it's ultimately unjust, the only way I can really eliminate God, then I have to say, what does ultimate injustice mean? Well, injustice, not just. That's a negation. Every negation presupposes an affirmation. I couldn't say it's not that unless I know what the that is. I couldn't say it's not good unless I knew what good was. And if I say there are ultimate injustices, then I presuppose an ultimate standard of justice. I have to presuppose God in order to disprove God. The problem of evil is just one great big vicious circle if it's used to disprove God. I was once debating an atheist on a college campus, and he used this attempt, and I pointed out that argument, and here was his response to the argument. He saw himself caught on the horns of a dilemma that he did not want to admit an ultimate standard of justice. So he simply said, before hundreds of intelligent people sitting there, not one of whom snickered, this is what I couldn't understand, he simply said, I don't say there's an ultimate standard of justice by which I eliminate God. The only reason I have for not believing in God is my, quote, my own benign moral feeling. Now, if I had gotten before that same crowd and said, folks, I don't have any good reasons for being a Christian, just my own benign moral feeling, they would have laughed. They didn't laugh in his case. Showed the prejudice of the mindset of the modern person who isn't impressed by his own inconsistency. Every effort to deny God turns out to be one that affirms God. And if God exists, miracles are possible. If miracles are possible, there is no anti-supernatural premise by which we can eliminate any of the passages of the Bible. Isaiah could have known Cyrus 200 years before. Jonah could have been swallowed by a great fish. Jesus could have risen from the dead, and everything in the Bible is believable because it's possible in the light of the existence of this God. Okay, give you a chance to ask a few questions. Start right down here. Okay, we're told that total perfection does not exist by non-believers. How could we recognize that if total perfection didn't exist? And I would simply say, I think that your question implies the answer, that it is impossible to, because it would be a circular argument. You would have to presuppose the standard of total perfection by which you were able to say that something is not does not meet that standard. Correct. All right, any other question? Way back there. Okay, how do we handle the Fatima miracles, the other miracles that occur in the modern world? He finds himself having a Hume-like attitude toward these. That's precisely what I said there, and I have the same attitude when it comes to the evidential value of those miracles. I don't admit the possibility of other kinds of miracles occurring today. I just deny that any of them can be connected with theistic truth claims. Because they don't have, they're all of the same nature. And for example, if somebody has a charismatic experience, a miraculous charismatic experience, and they say, hey, that made me more devout to Mary and more faithful to the Mass as a result of it. And somebody else who's a Mormon becomes a more devout Mormon because of it. And somebody else who's an evangelical Christian becomes more devout evangelical. I say, none of those experiences prove anything with regard to the truth of those three positions because they're all the same kind of experience and has no evidential value. I don't deny that one or more of them may have had a supernatural experience. I don't deny that at all. I just deny he has any right to connect it with truth claims of any kind. It has no apologetic value. It is self-canceling by virtue of the same kind of thing exists with other people who connect it with other truth claims, but not so with the truth claims of Christ and his apostles and the miracles recorded in the Bible. Can I illustrate the difference between what? Yeah, they're all of the healing variety, you know. They're all of this happened to me, I got this healing over this particular thing. They're not truth claims that are connected with hundreds of fulfilled prophecies converging in a sinless life, a virgin birth and resurrection from the dead. And that's obviously a different kind of set of convergence of miracles than any other religious system. They're all on the realm of healing type things, which could be psychosomatic, could be divine, could be demonic, could be a number of things, and therefore can't be attributed to a unique truth claim as support of it. Way over here. Thank you. All right. It was not my purpose to spend all of my time doing the ladder except to indicate the direction, and that's what I did at the very end. What I said in essence is the arguments against miracles are self-defeating. Well, that would mean that if miracles are not impossible, the opposite of that is they are possible. And that's all that I did. I didn't go into miracles actually happen. That's the historical argument, and that's been amply done by others. If you're interested in a key book on that, I would say read Frank Morrison's book, Who Moved the Stone, where he was a skeptic who was going to disprove Christianity, and he was going to use the resurrection and the evidence of it. He was converted to Christianity by looking at the evidence. So I would go into the historical evidence, particularly the resurrection, fulfilled prophecy, the life and miracles of Christ, as the positive historical evidence for doing it. That was not my purpose here. It was just to clear the ground for the believability and the possibility of miracles. I know of no philosophical arguments to prove miracles. Philosophy shows that miracles are possible. Only history shows that miracles are actual.